when my parents were setting expectations of what they wanted me to do, it was always get a job that pays a lot, that's stable, and won't get you in trouble. Basically the opposite of politics in every single way.
Welcome to In the Thick, a podcast about politics and the race to the White House in 2016. We're the show that examines this week's political coverage through a diverse lens with different perspectives. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, filling in for Maria Hinojosa. Joining me in Boston is the president of the Boston City Council, Michelle Wu. Welcome to the show, Michelle. Madam President, what do I call you? Michelle? Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you so much for having me.
And joining us from Newark is Jeff Yang, featured contributor at CNN. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
We've been wanting to do this particular episode for months, but there have been primaries every week. The GOP coming to terms with Donald Trump as a candidate here, all the wonky delegate math with the Democrats there. Finally, this week, a break during this insane primary season. So at Futuro Media Group, we produce a bunch of diverse programs, and the idea for this week's episode of In the Thick came from a conversation we had with a team at America by the Numbers, a PBS show we produce about America's changing demographics. As part of their next PBS special, they're going to be talking about the Asian American vote in the 2016 election, and we thought it would be great to have an extended discussion about this topic, which, to be honest with you, has been largely ignored this election season. And lucky us, we have two very knowledgeable and esteemed guests to inform us. We hear a lot on the news about the African-American vote and the Latino vote, but we rarely hear about the Asian-American vote. And this isn't some small oversight. There are 18 million Asian-Americans today, and that number is expected to more than double by 2060. So why don't we hear more about the political power of the Asian-American community? Madam President Michelle Wu.
It's a perpetual struggle that we in the Asian American community are always trying to have our voice heard, get our voice louder and stronger. And it's almost this, almost a vicious cycle where people feel like, community members feel like no one's paying attention, we're never in the media, no one cares, and therefore, why bother going to vote? Why run for office? And then the sort of stereotype of indifference sets in among the mainstream and no one covers it. And so it's been very interesting now being on this side of things as an elected official. I grew up never having thought about the potential that I could run for office one day.
No one said, like, you could be president of the Boston City Council, Michelle Wu.
No, well, first, I grew up in Chicago, so that was one thing. But
that's
secondly,
true.
I remember when I was younger, we didn't live in a very diverse suburb of Chicago. Grew up in was born in the city, moved out to the suburbs, and people told me all the time, hey, you should become a professional figure skater when you grow up.
Is it the time during
Michelle Kwan?
Beautiful split, very airy.
Michelle Kwan was, I think, the only famous Asian American woman around that was sort of known in the mainstream media. And so all the time, between Michelle Kwan and Yo-Yo Ma, those were
so
sort of the role models.
So listen, Jeff, let me bring you in. You're a journalist and you're covering this election. Why aren't we hearing about the political power of the Asian American community?
I think that for Asian Americans in particular, we have two demographic contexts that make it a little harder, I think, for people to really see us as an actualized electorate and as a political force. I think the first of these is that we still are, I think we're the only American racial population at this point that is predominantly growing through immigration. Mm. So, because I think Latinos,
we're going down.
Immigration is no longer the number one source
of
population growth, but among Asian Americans, it is, and which means that the blood of our population is constantly being refreshed with first generation immigrants, and the political process of embracing political advocacy, activism, organizing, and ultimately running for office is often something that occurs in the second generation and beyond, like with Michelle.
Certainly there's diversity among every ethnic, quote-unquote, minority. But within the AAPI community, there is incredible diversity among subgroups, right? Different languages, very different political circumstances from countries of origin among Asian Americans in the United States now. So it can be difficult also to identify, you know, what is one unifying issue.
The American Enterprise Institute recently wrote this. It says, if you're looking for a natural Republican constituency, Asians should define natural. And yet something has happened to define conservatism in the minds of Asians as deeply unattractive. What do you think about what the American Enterprise Institute is talking about here?
My parents are conservative in the way that I think immigrants, especially immigrants from the 1960s, were. They came here. They were strivers. They were all about building families, building professions and careers. They're also evangelical Christians, you know, as many, I think, coming from Taiwan, immigrating from Taiwan in the 1960s were. And those things do line up pretty well with some of the original, I think, communication strategies of the Republican Party before it went super crazy.
61% of Asian Americans view Trump unfavorably, but it's not just Trump. I mean, right, remember when Jeb Bush tried to deflect his comment about anchor babies by saying, like, no, I meant Asian anchor babies, not Latinos, as if that makes it all okay.
And frankly, it's more related to Asian people coming into our country, having children.
So, Michelle, is it actually conservatism that Asian Americans are finding unattractive, or is it the Republican Party?
The messaging and the connotations of conservatism have shifted in the last generation. And my parents also, I think, would still identify themselves as sort of middle-of-the-road conservatives, very much a pull-yourself-up-by-your-bootstraps mentality. He came here with nothing, worked hard, got a degree, and our situation economically changed a lot as I was growing up. I remember when we were younger, I had two sweatshirts from Walmart, and that was my wardrobe. And then as we got older, our, you know, we sort of moved into the middle class, moved up within the middle class. And that was all, you know, quote unquote, on his own.
Did you have to wear the sweatshirts in the summer?
I alternated. I rolled.
Wow.
But for the younger generation, there has been much more of an effort to connect communities of color. Mm-hmm. And there's been much more of an effort to identify and build solidarity. So I think now, you know, we certainly feel that an attack on other ethnic minorities, other communities of color, feels like it's right there at us, too.
So the survey also revealed that young Asian Americans are leaning Democratic in huge numbers, like really huge numbers. I mean, among Asian Americans between 18 to 34, a whopping 77% identify as Democrats, while only 12% identify as Republicans.
Yep. Conservatism today seems to be, there seems to be a core of, if not outright exclusion, at least protection of certain groups at the expense of others. The issues today are still, you know, civil rights, equality, equity. We're seeing income inequality ravaging cities, ravaging the country. As we're looking ahead to the future, to the economic opportunities that we'll have, investments have to be made now. And the party that's talking about making investments that will include everyone is on the left.
Jeff, what do you have to say?
Asian Americans who are coming into this Democratic Party are seeing already that a lot of the energy, a lot of the shift is coming from the left side of the party. That, you know, that centrist modality that dominated, you know, my 20s and 30s Democratic Party has certainly shifted. And I think that means that there's a different kind of an awakening among young Asian Americans. I also think that those of us who did grow up watching our parents struggle as hard as they did with huge amounts of frustration, I think that sense of the persistent inequality and the boundaries that exist beyond simply those that can be overcome purely by hard work, those are much more evident, I think, for the second generation. So, you know, those are the factors that converge, I think, on this progressive awakening.
I mean, one of the things that I've noticed in covering this election is how many younger Latinos have tended to be energized by Bernie Sanders. Have you noticed it, sort of Asian Americans in Boston kind of being energized by Sanders, or has it been more establishment or sort of like traditional Democratic politics?
Certainly, there are a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters there. I do think that young Asian Americans still want to see progress, still want to see plans, still want to see actual accomplishments, and it's hard to ignore. You know, I'm biased. I've made my endorsement. I've been supporting Hillary Clinton based on the track record and also specific plans. And you know, I won't lie. Bernie Sanders, the poetry, the vision, it does, you know, it moves me, and I feel the stirrings of what drives, you know, what many of my, you know, quote unquote millennial generation in that direction. But at the same time, being in politics, I know how hard it is to actually get something done once you're there and all the forces that you are dealing with.
Jeff, let's take this question, but also pivot it to June 7th. Since you're in California, you're based out there, and talking about the fact that 1 in 9 California voters are Asian American, and a third of whom identify as independents. Does this nature of Asian Americans, a third of them identifying as independents, is that going to benefit Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton?
I think that in general, the way California is set up, it's likely that this will be a much tighter race than the polls currently say. At the end of the day, we are looking at a numbers game, and by and large, it's pretty much inevitable at this point that Hillary Clinton is going to be the nominee. And, you know, as somebody who's firmly 100% behind never Trump, I have long felt like the biggest need that we as a community and ultimately as a polity need to do is to find a way to unite in both principle and action.
Hey, did you know In the Thick is a listener-supported podcast? Like any new program, your contributions are key to our success. You allow us to continue providing a diverse and authentic voice not heard anywhere else. Your gifts at any level truly do make a difference. If you can, I hope you will go to inthethick.org and click on the donate button. Every contribution helps our independent media. Oh, and one more favor, if you go to iTunes and rate and review In the Thick, it really helps new listeners find us. So, Michelle, we've spent time on In the Thick and also on Latino USA talking about how Ted Cruz has identified as Cuban-American, but never explicitly as Latino. According to Pew, fewer than 20% of Asian Americans identify as Asian or Asian American, and they're much more likely to simply say they're American or identify based on their ancestral country of origin. So why do you think that might be, Michelle?
Growing up, I didn't know a whole bunch of other... I didn't grow up in a very diverse neighborhood or city or town, and therefore the other Asian Americans I knew tended to be through our Chinese language school, mm-hmm. which we would get dragged to kicking and screaming every Sunday.
So Sunday would be Chinese language
yes,
school? You
exactly.
must love that.
And I think because it was that part of my identity was often based on language, it was very focused on Taiwan and mainland China, we have a lot of work to do in terms of building a strong, unified Asian American, Pacific Islander agenda across mm-hmm. the board.
What does it even mean to have a group Asian Americans when most of its members don't really identify as members? I mean, it's a relatively new term. I mean, it was created in the 60s, mm-hmm. right, with the Asian American movement?
One of the things we often don't hold up to the mirror is the fact that the term Asian American is literally one that was invented in our lifetimes, in my lifetime.
It's like Hispanic.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? So in 1968, right, the term Asian American was used for the first time publicly. And you have this constant refreshing of individuals who are coming in as immigrants for whom this term Asian American doesn't really make sense because there are no Asians in Asia. You know what I mean? There are Chinese and Koreans and Japanese. But here in America, we have a lens politically, culturally, socially that is strongly defined by race. And given that, the term Asian American as an organizing principle, that has had currency. But I will say this. Surveys have consistently shown that younger Asian Americans, more of them, the plurality of individuals identify as being Asian first, nationality second. That I think is pointing to the reality that because of the way American politics works, because race is such a strong lens here, because to attain political power, you do need to have numbers, and 18 million is a number to conjure with.
Michelle, in 2015, when you announced your plans to run for Boston City Council president, Globe columnist Shirley Leung had this to say about the lack of Asian American elected officials. And this is a quote. Asian culture is in part to blame. Public service isn't something to aspire to, and there are few role models. Stereotypes persist of Asians being smart and hardworking, but too quiet and docile to be leaders. Now, I'll be the first to say that I'm not Leung's biggest fan, but this seems way over the top for me. Am I missing something here? I mean, is this too much of a generalization?
Certainly, when I was growing up, the highest praise that my parents could give me was that I was henkwai, which kind of translates to either, you know, obedient. When my parents were setting expectations of what they wanted me to do as an adult, it was always get a job that pays a lot, that's stable, and won't get you in trouble. You know, basically the opposite of politics in every single way. The appetite for risk, I think, is something that I was raised to avoid. Mm. It only happened to me. I was only kind of thrust onto this track, and my eyes opened up because of some extenuating family circumstances when my mom came down with mental illness, and all of a sudden I was dealing with government a lot and realized how much it matters. But by and large, I've heard from many younger Asian Americans that the doctor and engineer tracks are still held up by our immigrant parents as the tracks that we should have pursued.
So Jeff, Michelle was talking about sort of expectations of parents and there's certain tracks, but what do you think?
You have the immigrant sense of focus first on security, right? Focus first on building a place for yourself in a place you don't know, a stranger in a strange land as we are. And then the second piece is people who are coming over educated with certain professional expectations, you know, for themselves, want to translate that into similar expectations for their children. So I don't think it's a stereotype of Asians so much as it is the circumstances of Asian immigrants to America.
Let's move on to our final segment, which we call Noam's Family List. If you're just listening for the first time, our producer Noam brainstormed a list of final segments with his family, and we'd like to let guests pick their favorite option. So this is my game show announcer voice coming on. So let's see. We've got Fantasy CNN, What's Missing, Political Lenses, What We've Got Wrong, and Last Call, where guests say things they might only say after a few drinks. So Jeff, which one do you want to pick off the board?
I'm gonna take what we're getting wrong.
All right, go for it.
I think that what we're seeing a lot of is a narrative around Asian Americans which suggests that as a group, Asian Americans are against affirmative action. If you actually look at the numbers, and these are in the AAPI survey, but they've been upheld consistently by other research, Asian Americans broadly support affirmative action. There is a past and a present of Asian Americans being helped by affirmative action across the board in business, in politics, in entertainment. I obviously have a bit of a ringside seat for this, but
you do.
Yeah, for those of you who are listening and don't know, I am only maybe the second most interesting person in my family right now.
I am because Hudson's biggest fan.
You see, Hudson Yang. For people that don't know, Hudson Yang plays the lead Eddie in Fresh Off the Boat. We weren't going to bring this up, Jeff, but you brought it up, so we now are talking to Hudson's dad and
yes.
Both Michelle and I.
And Hudson's biggest fan.
Did you just hear that the president of the Boston City Council is your son's biggest fan? And I want to say that my son, Miguel, is a huge fan.
He is no doubt going to be hugely flattered by both of those. I certainly am on his behalf. And the fact is, it's a strong example of how in the actual coming together of that show, without actually, I would say even quota-based racial preferences, those opportunities wouldn't have existed. We complain as Asian Americans all the time about our underrepresentation in politics and journalism and, yes, in entertainment. And we benefit from programs that specifically create opportunities for ethnic minorities and racial minorities.
Michelle, what are you choosing?
I'm going to take Political Lenses, just kind of zoom in on a sub-segment of the community, of the Asian American community, but defined by occupation. I am a former small business owner, and so many Asian American immigrants, I think immigrants in general, but particularly in the Asian American community, are still choosing small business ownership and entrepreneurship as their profession. Opening a business is still a very risky endeavor, and yet many are choosing that. And if you look at the numbers, if you zoom it in by age as well, Americans 35 and under, Asian Americans actually make up a higher than average percentage of all Americans in terms of entrepreneurship and owning their own business. So I think when we're thinking about politics and what does that mean, and is the Asian American community a swing vote, that is one important lens to keep track of, just the unique challenges that being a small business owner brings to the table and how you view the person who's going to be in government making your life miserable potentially, or trying to cut some of the red tape and bureaucracy,
right,
because so much of what you're able to do is often limited by those in government.
I'm also going with what we've got wrong, and I'm going to rant for a minute because I'm actually closing my eyes as Michelle's looking at me at the studio because I have to take a breath. I have to take a Zen moment. So these Donald Trump protests that are happening out west, the media is just incredibly shocked that Mexican flags are being flown around. And I've actually heard commentators saying, well, it's just proving Trump's point that we're becoming a third world country because Mexican flags are being thrown around. So you're just playing into it. And I just sit here and I say to myself, what if it were an Irish flag? What if we're an Italian flag? What if it were a French flag? Like, when has the Mexican flag now, it's almost become this like symbol of everything that is wrong in America, when in fact, there's just proud Mexican-Americans that are just waving their flag and using their right for free expression to protest a candidate that, to be honest with you, started his campaign by insulting that community. So I needed to just let that out. I've taken a breath. Okay.
We're with you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, guys. Michelle Wu, president of the Boston City Council, and Jeff Yang, featured contributor at CNN, thanks for joining me in this week's episode of In the Thick.
Thank you so much for having me. Really fun.
Thank you, Julio. It was awesome.
I'm your host, Julio Ricardo Varela, filling in for Maria Hinojosa. And remember, go to iTunes to rate and review us. It really helps. Follow us on Twitter at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook. And tell your friends, tell your elected officials, tell your fellow Hollywood actors, Jeff Yang. Tell everyone.
Tell
yeah, exactly. Tell Hudson. Yeah,
tell Hudson,
please.
Yes.
I would love Hudson to tweet us out. That would be like the coolest thing ever. Noam Hassenfeld produced this show, and he also composed some of the show's music. The other music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Records. We'll see you around the next time. Nos vemos. Thank you for listening. This was In the Thick.